This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news.
To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the mouth.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me. And we're going to take a deep dive into a couple of interesting teams this week. The first one's the Golden State Warriors. I'll be joined by Mark Medina, the great writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Interesting offseason once again for Golden State. They add DeMarcus Cousins. They probably sew up another championship. What does the future look like for Golden State? What about Kevin Durant? What about free agency in the summer of 2019? We'll talk about that more with Mark Medina. A little bit later on, Keith Pompey, the writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, he's going to join me to discuss everything 76ers, from Markel Fultz's disastrous first season, how he gets better, Ben Simmons, how does he improve as a shooter, plus what's going on with the front office? Is Brett Brown running things over there? Will they hire a GM? All that and more with Keith Pompey. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me now on the podcast, you can read his stuff in the San Jose Mercury News, terrific beat writer covering the Golden State Warriors. Mark Medina joins me now on the show. What's up, Mark?
Going on, Chris. I'm ready for the season to start. All of a sudden, it's amazing what a vacation will do for you to make you feel that way. Because during summer league, I was kind of ready for all of this to end for a little bit.
Yeah, I see. I still need my vacation, so I'm not anxious for the season to start anytime soon. So give me a few more weeks, and I'll be good to go. So there's that. All right. So the Warriors continue to be one of, if not the most interesting teams in the league. And a couple things I want to start with here, Mark, is that, you know, at the end of last season, you win a championship and back-to-back champions now in Golden State. But one of the narratives that was pushed out there by the front office was that there would be some retooling done, specifically when it came to that supporting cast. And they did that. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins is the big name that they brought in, but they bring in Jonas Jerebko, they drafted Jacob Evans. What do you think of what the Warriors did to the supporting cast this offseason?
Well, obviously, when you look at the surface, they hit a home run because they only had $5.2 million really to spend with that taxpayer mid-level exception. Everything else was veteran minimum deals, and they were able to land an all-star in DeMarcus Cousins. And I think I'm with you. Like, if I were to make a bet, I think it's safe to say the Warriors are going to win the NBA championship next season, and partly because they have that other all-star. They have four other all-stars. But as far as their bench is concerned, there are question marks, starting with the fact that they don't know when DeMarcus Cousins is going to be back. And when you look at their bench, it's the ultimate of NBA first-world problems because of how good their starting lineup is. But they don't really have that definitive score. They don't have that definitive outside shooter. And I think where that could go into play in helping the Warriors, or maybe relatively speaking hurting the Warriors, is DeMarcus Cousins, because he's going to be starting, no questions about that. Steve Kerr made it abundantly clear he's starting over Jordan Bell and Damian Jones. No offense to those guys, but DeMarcus is a little bit more established. But I think he's going to get a lot of minutes on that second unit because he's a guy that can carry the bulk of that scoring load. But, you know, when you look at the rest of the guys, Jonas Jerebko, presumably Patrick McCall coming back, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, they're not guys that will screw anything up, but I don't think those are guys that are going to be able to give you scoring on a minute's notice.
So let's talk about Cousins for a second. I mean, is there any downside to you to bringing him in? He hasn't always been the most, I'm trying to think of the right word there, the most, the best locker room guy. He's had some issues, some volatility as well. Do you think there's any downside to this?
No, only because it's the Warriors. I think it, in the worst case scenario, right, where DeMarcus Cousins' timetable is delayed, or he's the much lesser version of himself physically, or he suddenly doesn't feel the things that he felt about in his introductory press conference, where he said he understands the parameter, he's going to have to, you know, sacrifice his numbers and his role. The Warriors can say, look, we have four all-stars that we've won NBA championships, and we'll do that again. You can sit on the bench. The best case scenario, even if you're getting a somewhat limited DeMarcus Cousins, is that you're going to get his production. You're going to allow him to provide secondary scoring, which allows some of those all-stars to rest. And I think the most important thing, Chris, with this is if you're going to microanalyze the Warriors, you know, quote unquote issues last season, it was that they were bored. The regular season was such a challenge for them to get up for 82 games. And I think with DeMarcus Cousins and all the questions that we're talking about his health and his integration process, I think this is kind of a thing that will help stimulate the Warriors and keep them engaged. That I don't want to say it's, hey, let's win an NBA championship for DeMarcus, but I think kind of day to day, this sort of thing will help the Warriors be invested in and wanting to make sure that this is the right environment for DeMarcus. And it certainly helps that he already has some of those relationships with Team USA, with all the All-Stars, with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. I'm not going to say that that can fully replicate an NBA team, right, because it is a full season, but I think the fact that they already have history together will show that they are friends and they can kind of hold him accountable for some of those kind of potential pitfalls.
I've already got the slogan. If it's win for DeMarcus, win number three, win number three for DMC.
Yeah. The other slogan, and maybe a parlor game, is who's going to get the most technicals out of the group, right? DeMarcus Cousins, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant. That's another thing that could keep the season interesting a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think there's any downside here. I mean, DeMarcus has to go into this with his eyes wide open. He knows he's not going to be a 35-minute-per-game type of guy. He knows his numbers are going to go down, but it's his chance to get healthy, and it's his chance to take a championship back into free agency and maybe rehab his image, too. I mean, you know, people talk about the injury being a factor in the free agency chase for him, or lack of a chase for him. His attitude is a factor. It just was. I mean, teams didn't want to bring him into their locker room. And when you combine that with the injury, it made him basically radioactive to a number of teams. So I think there's no downside for Golden State, and there's almost no downside for DeMarcus Cousins, because if he's healthy, he is going to hit free agency next summer when he's still in his 20s and be able to go chase that big deal that he's looking for. All right, let me ask you about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant could have signed a max level long-term deal this summer. Now, we know there are financial reasons not to do it for both KD and the Warriors. For Kevin Durant, next summer he can sign a 5-year max deal, with Golden State having his bird rights. And by signing a shorter deal this year, he did free up some money that eventually went to DeMarcus Cousins. All that being said, Kevin Durant is going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer, when some very interesting teams are going to have a lot of cap space. What did you make of KD's decision, Mark?
Yeah, I think you ventured into it perfectly, where there is this total unknown about him. And I think part of it has to do with just who he is as a guy. And no doubt, like, from what I was told when he made this decision, the main driving force, as you alluded to, was the financial flexibility, because he can get that 5-year $219 million deal. I don't think the quote-unquote pay cut had much to do with it. I think that was just a nice coincidence that the Warriors surely appreciated, but I think if it was their preference, they would have locked him up long-term. But as far as where he goes next, now, if I had a guess, I don't feel comfortable enough making a bet where, hey, I would join you in saying, hey, I'll shave my head over this. I think he is going to stay with the Warriors, but I wouldn't be surprised that if he were to leave, because there's just this, I think, general unknown about what makes Kevin Durant tick as a player and as a person around the league. Now, me personally, my first year on the beat, it was always pleasant talking with him. I think that he enjoys that kind of give and take with the media. And when there were, quote unquote, tough questions to ask him, you know, sometimes he would answer back and ask to clarify, but there was never any hint of defensiveness. It was more of just having a conversation and gain a sense of where you're coming from. But I juxtapose that versus what we saw this past year on social media with the burner account situation, him going back and forth with CJ McCollum, and I'm scratching my head. And I'm also scratching my head on this element of the whole basketball decision. As much as he's gotten criticism for going to Golden State, it makes sense why he went to Golden State, right? They're a really good team. They have a really great culture. But I think there is some element of thought that all that criticism has gotten to him. Maybe he wants to prove that he can, you know, win without taking the quote-unquote easy street. And the other thing that also makes this confusing is his experience with Golden State has been nothing but positive. Obviously, he's won two NBA titles, two finals MVPs, but his teammates have made it a real great environment for him. There hasn't really been any egos involved. You know, there's always been, you know, kind of an X's and O's exercise in terms of the dynamic between Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, but nothing, you know, personality driven. And also, he really likes the Bay Area because of the community and the fact that he's been able to tap into, you know, some business ventures out here with the tech economy. So when you're hearing all these things, it sounds contradictory for a reason, and explains perfectly why it's really hard to gauge where he's going to go. That being said, I am willing to make a bet on Kevin Durant that I do not see him going to the Lakers whatsoever. And I think the reason with that has to do with LeBron James. Now, he holds LeBron James in a very high regard. You know, they have a good relationship, but LeBron's the guy that he wants to compete for with championships and legacy. Like, he even said after he hit that game winner, not in this year's finals, but the previous year's finals, like, he saw that as a symbolic moment where he thought, hey, I'm on the same level as LeBron James. Now, I don't think you can really debate that. LeBron is the better player, but in Kevin's mind, the more he wins titles, the more that he would be a part of that kind of legacy conversation. And I think on top of that, as much as he respects LeBron James, he's his contemporary. It's not like Kevin Durant is this younger player. And I think whether it's coming from LeBron or just the national narrative in general, I don't think he would take kindly to this whole idea that LeBron would be this kind of mentor figure to Kevin Durant. I mean, Kevin has been in the league since 2007 and kind of knows what he's doing already.
Yeah, I completely agree with that position on the Lakers. I said this a couple of times in the last month. I'd spoken to someone that's close to Kevin Durant, and he basically said a lot of what you're saying there, that when you get to a certain level, when a player like KD gets to a certain level, he doesn't want to go to LA. I think he would have considered LA if LeBron wasn't there next summer.
Right.
But when LeBron there, you want to be the one that wins the most championships of the players in your generation. You had Michael in the 90s, Kobe in the early 2000s. Now you have LeBron James with his three titles. Presumably next summer, Kevin Durant is going to have a third championship, putting him on the same level championship-wise with LeBron James. That just juices up that competitive fire. I mean, that gets it even more. That stokes it even more in Kevin Durant. So I don't think he teams up with LeBron at all. I do think that there's a look. I think it's going to be a legit free agency for Kevin Durant next summer. I don't think there's going to be we're going to sign whatever deal with Golden State. I think he'll take some meetings. I think he'll go through the process. Look, he's going to have the option of being 30 years old, three championships, $85 million richer on the court from income with Golden State, and a blank canvas. He can do whatever he wants. His legacy will largely be secured because of the titles. He's already established one of the great scorers, not just of his generation, but maybe of all time. I think that's going to make him, you know, kind of cast that wandering eye out there. Maybe whether that means the Knicks or somebody else, I think he's going to take a long look at other places, Mark.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Chris. And when we're talking about this, I don't think this has anything to do negatively with Golden State.
I mean, oh, I don't either. Yeah,
they've won very well with him. The integration process has been pretty much drama-free. I mean, there were some X's and O's conversations to be had, particularly in that Houston series. But I think the Warriors were mindful at the end of the day, as much as Kevin might have gotten beaten up for, you know, shooting the ball a lot and playing ISO heavy ball against Houston. The reality is Steph Curry and Klay Thompson weren't shooting the ball well the first two games of that series. And I think that they're kind of tipping their hat to Houston that, look, their switch heavy defense really threw them out of whack, and it's something that they weren't used to seeing. And then on top of that, they obviously have the most money to offer. They are going to be moving to Chase Center next season in San Francisco. Maybe that's an extra carrot. But the thing that's still kind of the overriding theme is Kevin Durant is kind of a unique player, you know, compared to any other star in the NBA, where, you know, whether it's too simplistic, the usual narrative regarding a star and the criticism they faced, that wind up being diluted and quiet as soon as they win an NBA championship. And with Kevin Durant, that just hasn't been the case, because that's fed into the narrative again that, you know, he got this championship by going down the easy path. And to what degree will that kind of influence his thinking into wanting to prove that he can win elsewhere? Who knows? I wish I had answers, but frankly, people around the NBA don't as well.
Now, you mentioned that there isn't a lot of drama with this team, and what breaks up teams at times is a group getting sick of each other, which has happened before in multiple different instances with teams, which brings me back to David West's post-championship comments about people had no idea about the stuff that went on behind the scenes. Over the last couple of months, Mark, what have you taken that to mean? What have you kind of discovered about what David West was sort of alluding to?
Well, Chris, I will caution what I'm about to say with the old adage in our field of you don't know what you don't know, right? But as soon as he said that, obviously my ears perked up. When I was poking around, the people around the Warriors were saying, look, he was, you know, high off the championship euphoria. He had a few beverages in him. And frankly, David West was trolling you guys because he knew that you guys would react that way. So I haven't heard anything substantial behind the scenes of any, you know, quote unquote drama since then. And just covering the season last year, I mean, the only issues that the Warriors really faced were the usual issues that defending championship teams face, right? Where how do they navigate that 82-game season knowing that it's a long haul and a marathon without, quote-unquote, skipping steps? And then there are injuries to be had, most notably with Steph Curry, but some overlapping ones to their All-Stars that contributed to them losing, you know, I think 10 of their last 17 games to close out the regular season. But other than that, there weren't really like personality conflicts. So I think when you're looking at this and taking a step back of when does this end, I mean, maybe Kevin Durant leaves, but I don't think it has anything to do with personality or egos. And then when you're looking at, you know, the pending free agency for Klay Thompson next season, Draymond Green 2 years from now, I am 100% certain that Klay Thompson isn't going anywhere. He is going to re-sign with the Warriors. He's been on record to me and others and privately with, you know, people around his camp saying that he has no desire to leave. He has no desire to try to make as much money as he can. He has no desire to be the quote-unquote guy on the team. He really understands that he has something special here with the Warriors, and this, you know, role that he has where he's kind of second and third fiddle, it fits into what Klay Thompson wants. Draymond Green, I think to some extent he has the same thoughts of he knows that he has something special here and he doesn't want to leave. But I think with those two guys, the devil's going to be in the details of to what extent will they be willing to take pay cuts and to what extent can the Warriors kind of meet them halfway. The encouraging thing from where the Warriors stand, you know, Joe Lacob, the majority owner, has told me time and time again that he is not concerned about luxury taxes so long as those moves help them win. And it also helps that they're going to be moving to Chase Center next year. It's a $1 billion privately financed arena, and that means that they're going to get 100% of the profits. So I don't think those two guys are going to go anywhere, but I don't think it's enough that they're going to suddenly agree to those extension offers that Joe Lacob has provided. But when and if this run ends, I don't think it's going to be because of those things. I think it's going to be because of maybe Kevin Durant leaving and then Father Time catching up at some point to the other All-Stars and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. And then it's a matter of when that happens. Can the Warriors either make moves to replace any of those guys, or can they tweak, you know, that system, you know, kind of the way that the Spurs did with Tim Duncan, where they can kind of build and adjust around them so they can, you know, stay with them for the long haul.
I'm with you on Klay Thompson. I mean, you've had way more conversations with him, but every time I've talked to him about this very subject, it's always some variation of, man, winning's just a lot of fun, and I like winning, and I don't want anything different, you know, but this kind of feeling over and over again. So I think he locks up at the best possible moment for him as well. The question I would have about could personalities break up this locker room, with the understanding that I don't believe that anybody dislikes each other on that team, but I wonder how much is Draymond a lot like for some of these guys to deal with? I mean, is he just like just the day to day of Draymond? Like, how taxing is that? Like, for even a guy like Andre Iguodala, who's basically the hall monitor out there for some of this stuff, as the vet in that group, like, is that personality and how and the intensity and sometimes the over intensity with which he plays with and how he talks and how he kind of conducts himself out there, do you ever get the sense that's exhausting for some of the guys that are around him, because he's like that night in and night out at times? And look, it's what makes him a great player, but I wonder what the, you know, the impact that has on the guys in his locker room.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Draymond is not, you know, the perfect player, right? But Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, said it best during this summer, where he said he's beautifully imperfect. And I think that's the way the Warriors see him. Like, there's no doubt that Steve Kerr and Draymond sometimes get into it. But I think that was more earlier in his career with, you know, Draymond wanting to shoot threes. I think Steve Kerr has kind of come around to the idea that, hey, you can shoot threes if they're open. Draymond has had a better understanding of when to take them. The only conversations and frustrations that they have is when he gets a lot of technicals. And even that's kind of qualified, because they're very well aware that Draymond needs that edge to be at his best. So they're willing to kind of absorb some of those things. But as far as his personality and how he is with guys, guys on the team love him. And I remember, to illustrate this, talking to Jordan Bell, you know, the Warriors rookie this past year, he's entering his second year, as far as what Draymond is like as a teammate. And he's certainly a guy who will yell at you and get in your face and trash talk during scrimmages. And if you're making mistakes, he'll point it out to you. But Jordan Bell stressed to me that Draymond will only yell at you if he thinks that you're not bringing the full effort. But if you're making, you know, quote unquote, rookie mistakes, he's not going to get in your face about it. So I think when you're looking at all that, the Warriors have been so adamant on and off the record that any kind of short-term consequence of Draymond getting technicals, it's vastly not proportional to the long-term benefit of his overall intensity and edge that he provides the team, the kind of accountability that he provides to both teammates and to himself, and not to mention just his overall skill set, you know, just in regards to his defense, his versatility, his playmaking, and his occasional scoring. I think that if there is a question mark down the line about Draymond, is how he is physically. He had a few knickknacks throughout last season with his shoulder and his knee, and I think that there's a real fascination of how Draymond deals with father time long term. He's only 28 years old, so he's still young, but he's a guy that's already had some injuries. He's a guy that, you know, needs to have a physical presence because of who he is as a defender, and because he absorbs a lot of contact inside. So as much as I think that he'll have the smarts and IQ and versatility to, you know, still be effective as he gets older, I think there's a real concern and intrigue of how will he respond when he no longer has the same kind of physical tools that he has right now.
You know, what's interesting is that while the Warriors staying together would, you know, be bad for everybody in the Western Conference to have to deal with them, I think it could make for some titanic matchups with Boston for the next few years.
Because
I mean, the Celtics are going to, I don't think the Celtics are there this year. I think you got to get to the finals first and, you know, have that experience, especially for some of those younger guys before you can be a real threat. Plus, you know, with Cousins there, I mean, that really all but wrapped it up for Golden State. But, you know, if KD comes back long term, if Klay comes back, I mean, the next 3 years, while that Warriors team is still basically in its prime, and Boston with some of its young players hitting their prime, and the way the Celtics play them, like this, like the Celtics have that kind of switch happy defense and the coaching to compete with them, and they have, they're 3-3 against them the last 3 years. I think those could be just some clashes of the titans over the next few years.
Without a doubt. I mean, Chris, you would have much more insight than I do about the Celtics, but what you said and about them is exactly what Steve Kerr has said. He anticipated last season that at some point they're going to meet a lot of times in the finals because he has a lot of affection for Brad Stevens. They have a relationship. There's a lot of qualities that Brad Stevens has that reminds Steve Kerr of himself in terms of just how he relates to players, how he maximizes role players, just is very flexible with his overall system and handles his stars. But also, I think when the Warriors particularly lost that first meeting in Boston, I mean, Steph Curry said for a reason why he kind of said tongue-in-cheek, I hear, you know, Junes are pretty nice in Boston. They kind of were anticipating, hey, this is a very strong possibility because of a few things. One, they were able to win even without Gordon Hayward, not just against the Warriors, but throughout last season. And the one thing that the Celtics did was expose some of the Warriors' relative weaknesses of if you play physical with them, sometimes they don't play physical back. I mean, Draymond Green will certainly play physical back, but the Warriors as a whole, they don't always have that defensive edge that Steve Kerr wants them to have. And then I think secondly, they were able to really get the Warriors frustrated and out of their comfort zone because they were getting a lot of whistles. And not only did that allow the Celtics to go to the free throw line, but it kind of tapped into one of the other Warriors' weaknesses where if they get in foul trouble, all of a sudden they're complaining to the officials. They're getting texts and they're getting kind of distracted a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, it has mostly to do with just how talented and well-coached the Celtics are that I wouldn't say that the Warriors would guarantee that they would play the Celtics, presuming they go to the finals. But I think they would be a pretty heavy favorite.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It could be a lot of fun, though, in the years to come. Mark, always appreciate your time here on the podcast. Enjoy what's left of this off season, and we'll see you out there in training camp, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Chris. Yeah, I always enjoy being on your podcast and listening to it. And yeah, you do the same thing. Try to get some well-deserved vacation time so you can get up for another fun season. And
absolutely,
you know, who knows? Maybe we'll see each other next June in Boston.
There we go. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right, before we get to Keith Pompey, let me tell you about today's sponsor. Support for the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast with Chris Maddox comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make, but today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, your assets, your credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer much more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then, once you've found one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's a kind of thing you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Maddox. rocketmortgage.com/Maddox. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. Okay, now to my interview with the Philadelphia Inquirer's Keith Pompey. All right, joining me on the podcast this week, one of the best beat writers out there, covers the Sixers for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philly.com. He is Keith Pompey, and he joins me here on the line. What's happening, Keith?
Hey, what's good, man? Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Oh, glad to have you. And I want to start with sort of the uncertainty at the top in Philadelphia. As we speak, there is still no general manager effectively in place to replace Brian Colangelo. Heard some stuff over the summer about Daryl Morey. That didn't happen. Obviously, Brett Brown is running kind of point on a lot of stuff. What's your understanding of where the Sixers are at the top and what their plan is moving forward?
You know, the plan is, like, where they are is kind of like in the middle of, I guess, to most people, say the middle of Neverland. Like, you know, you need to hurry up and find something and you don't. But the Sixers are basically, you know, they're not really surprising to people who really know them, because if you think back to when Brett Brown was hired, you know, they didn't have a coach in place until this time. And they feel as if that, you know, everything that they do is slow and a thought out process. And, you know, they're not hitting the alarm button because, you know, they did it with Brett Brown. They did it with other issues. But in regards to what they want, you know, we hear the thing about Daryl Morey. You know, sources were, you know, saying, you know, coming up with names like R.C. Buford, you know, and other top-notch general managers. And you keep asking yourself, how in the world can the Sixers lure these type of people? You know, because what the Sixers want, yes, they want a named general manager, but they're also looking for someone who doesn't have the final say, so to speak. They want to do it all like, you know, a group decision. And I don't think that that's going to work well with a top-notch guy who had a former general manager experience. So with that being said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised unless they went out there and got someone, you know, who's basically like second or third in command somewhere else, if they stayed in-house and probably gave it to a guy like a Ned Cohen, just because in that instance, you know, Brett Brown will still have a lot of say in what's going on, and the ownership group will continue to have say in what's going on, and they can utilize Ned's relationships with all the teams around the league and keep it moving, so to speak.
Do you understand? I mean, what's your understanding of why they don't want a GM having that kind of authority, that final say? Because you're 100% right. I mean, the top GMs out there are not going to go take a job. Or even the top free agent GMs, like a David Griffin or somebody else, are not going to take a job where they don't have, you know, absolute authority on big decisions. Why are they so resistant to that idea?
Because, see, there's a guy in the ownership group. His name is David Heller. Excuse me. He's you know, one of the guys from New York. You know, when Sam Hinkie was the GM, you know, from what you hear, is he was a guy who was basically, you know, running the meetings and you know, he had a heavy hand in the decision making. And at this particular time, he again has a heavy hand in the decision making. And when you look at the fact that they have Joel Embiid, they got Ben Simmons, and they have all these other guys, they feel as if the model that they had worked. So why tweak it? You know, and also it's one of those things where, you know, they're heavy analytics based. You know, Brett Brown has a say. They trust Brett Brown. So you feel like right now, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And that's why they believe that. And again, it's good to go after a big name guy for free agency, but they feel as if that what they have right now and the stuff that they made, the decisions they made in the past, even though we all criticize it, we all said, what are the Sixers doing like we're doing now? If you look at the fact that they won 52 games and they should have two All-Stars this year, they feel as like while people are laughing, at the end of the day, they had the last laugh. That's why they want to keep doing what they have been doing.
On a side note, I'm not sure there are too many stories more amazing in the last like 5 years that Brett Brown is still there, like that he survived the firing of Hanky, that he survived the Colangelos. And not only is he still the coach of that team, but he also has been empowered in a front office sort of quasi role by that ownership group. I mean, you cover this stuff day to day. How amazed are you that we're here at this point with Brett Brown?
Yeah, I am. I mean, you know, you think about it. You know, it was always the annual storyline, so to speak. In the beginning of the season, I was always on a Brett Brown, you know, firing, you know, alert. You know, and you go in there and you ask people, you know, who's going to be Brett Brown's replacement and this and that. And now the fact that, you know, he's withstood two general managers and he gets another extension. Now, the first extension was crazy because people fail to realize when he got his first extension, the Sixers were 1-20 at that time, and they gave him an extension. So, you know, you look at it and you wonder, you're like, wow, this guy has a lot of lives. Now, again, I will say that Brett Brown does have a strong relationship with ownership group. I mean, to a point that after home games, there's a lot of times that, you know, the owner, Josh Harris, will meet Brett in the locker room and, excuse me, in the coach's office, and they will go over the game. So, you know, Brett, they really think he's a bright guy. They think he's a good coach. And, but again, you know, looking at his record, especially the first 3 years, you wouldn't imagine that this guy would get a second extension or that he would, you know, be the interim general manager as we speak.
It's crazy. When they added Mike D'Antoni to that staff, I thought there was no way Brett Brown would survive more than a year. Because I don't know how you feel about it, but I think if Mike didn't take that Rockets job, he would have been elevated at some point during that season to be the head coach there.
You know, I think so too. And I think that, you know, I think Brett probably felt the same way.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you see it in, like, you know, Mike D'Antoni, you know, he plays the style of play. Well, he coaches the style that the Sixers like, you know, and then you have the Colangelos on board, and we all know the relationships that he has with, you know, with them and particular Jerry, because Jerry hired him with the Sixers. And I think that a lot has changed. I mean, think about it. You know, when Ben Simmons when Ben Simmons was hurt that 1 year and he got hurt, I think that it was unfair. The Sixers probably felt like, okay, you know, this guy has missed another year. Joel Embiid missed the previous two. And I think in a way that kind of gave Brett a little reprieve, to whereas, you know, the clock in regards to judging him on wins and losses basically, you know, stopped. I mean, like, was on pause. Because I think if Ben Simmons would have played and that team would have struggled, because let's face it, you know, that team did not have a J.J. Redick. They did not have an Amir Johnson, you know, leadership. You know, they did not have some of these other young players that they had who would have, you know, helped the team with the 52 wins. So I think that, you know, in a way, that kind of helped Brett a little bit. And also, as you also said, alluded to, you know, D'Antoni, you know, it was one of those things, if he would have stuck around and if Ben Simmons didn't get hurt, you know, we'd probably be saying that, you know, Mike would be the coach right now and Colangelo would still be the general manager.
Yeah, it's crazy. We'll talk about the some of the offseason moves they made, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, the improvement in Philadelphia next season likely comes from within, with some of the young players that they have and the next steps they take. I want to ask you about Markelle Fultz, whose season can't be described as anything but a disaster. I mean, 14 games, shot 40% in those games, did not make a single three-pointer, all while battling either, however you want to describe it, an injury or a case of the yips, whatever it was. We know Fultz has been working with Drew Hanlon, who has worked with a lot of players, Jason Tatum among them. What do we know now? What do you know now, Keith, about where Fultz is at? I mean, what they're expecting from him. What are we going to get from Markelle Fultz at the start of next season?
You know, I think that's the million-dollar question, actually the billion-dollar question, and I don't think anyone can answer it. I don't even think Markelle Fultz can answer it. Drew Hanlon can answer it. I mean, again, because, you know, the thing is I believe, and the people I've spoken to is like, you know, I know they said he had the shoulder injury, but, you know, it was also some mental stuff, and the mental stuff contributed to the yips. So, Yes, he's out there working with Drew Hanlon. Drew Hanlon says that he improved, and he may have, but it's like until we see the actual video of him doing a workout, you know, we haven't even seen like four shots in a row. But until we see the actual video, then we don't have an idea. Secondly, it's one of those things where, you know, shooting in the gym in Los Angeles is great and you're working on your form. But then if it's something that's mental, you know, it's one of those things where we want to see what happens when he gets into a pressure situation, a situation where, you know, you're just 20,000 people in the arena, you're on the road, you're in Boston in the first game of the season. And then that's when we'll really know what Markelle Fultz has done. Now, the one thing that I will say is that, you know, the fact that the 76ers did not were able to get a top-notch free agent, they were unable to trade for Kawhi Leonard. You know, now the pressure is back on Markelle, where everyone is saying, you know what, we didn't get a free agent, we didn't make a trade, but we have Markelle back. You know, he's supposed to be the missing piece a year ago, so let's see if he can be that guy right now. So all eyes are going to be on Markelle. And a lot of people think in order for the 76ers to make the next step, you know, Markelle Fultz will have to play out of his mind this season. So, you know, right now, no one knows what to expect. And if they're saying they do, they're lying to you. But at the same time, I feel as if the pressure is on Markelle to excel this season.
Look, the Sixers were incredibly ambiguous with Fultz, and Fultz didn't volunteer much information about everything that went on. But was it your understanding that it was more of a mental thing than a physical thing, especially with him, especially in the second half of the season?
Yeah, it was. You know, the thing is, like you said, the Sixers weren't sharing anything. You know, it was one of those things, like when you talk to people around the league and, you know, they were all saying, hey, it's a mental thing. I'm hearing it's a mental thing. And I'm like, are you sure? You know, you sure it's not the shoulder? And then the more people you spoke to, it was true. It came out that it was a mental thing. And, you know, you can see it. Like, you can see where, you know, from my understanding, it's like, you know, his shot came back towards the latter part of the season. And then next thing you know, it went back down again. And from what my understanding is right now, again, I haven't seen any video or anything like that, but right now it is where it was towards the end of the season again. So now he just has to have the confidence, you know, to shoot it. And we'll see if he has. But, yeah, it was more mental than anything. And I feel as if, you know, part of the reason why the Sixers really didn't want him doing interviews, you know, now he did do the one, you know, on TV, national television, that his agent set up, was because it was a mental thing. I feel like if it was just something strictly a shoulder, you know, he would have been back. He would have been at least talking to the media. And the thing that people fail to realize is that he was cleared to return back to practice and do stuff. Like they announced that his shoulder injury was over in December. I want to say December the 16th or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? So it was mental. The Sixers, again, they were protecting them. And then we also remember when they played at OKC and Brett Brown was interviewed. And, I mean, I guess they did the interview on ESPN. And it came out that, you know, it was, you know, psychosomatic. And then all of a sudden it became like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. So it was out there that it was a mental thing. You know, because if it wasn't, he would have been on the floor a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he is their free agent acquisition, like you said. I mean, he's the guy that could step in and play a prominent role and help them take that next step, or he can go the other direction if that confidence just isn't there. Let me ask you about Ben Simmons, who by any measure had a successful, you know, rookie season, 16 points per game, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, shot 54% from the floor, wins Rookie of the Year. Excellent year for Ben Simmons. Now the next step with him is interesting because he's another guy that didn't make a single 3-pointer last year and, mm-hmm. you know, didn't attempt to hold that many of them either, only 11 total for Ben Simmons. What are the Sixers want from him, do you think, as a perimeter shooter? Because it looked to me, Keith, like the point guard thing worked out pretty well. A lot of his game obviously translates to the NBA. What do they need from him? What are they hoping from him as a perimeter shooter?
You know, they don't want him to be they don't need him to be a great perimeter shooter. And I will just go back last year. They didn't even really ask him to take the shot, you know, a lot. But I think they need him to at least attempt some of them and possibly make some of them. Don't make a lot, but make enough to whereas teams will play him honest, you know, and that's what they want. Like, they know that he's not going to be, you know, challenging Steph Curry for shots in the perimeter. But at the same time, if he can develop and be like a Tony Parker or a John Wall or someone that will, you know, just keep people honest, you know, down the road, I mean, that's what they want. Now, the one thing I will say about Ben is, like, and I know practice is different than the game, but you'll see Ben attempt 5 threes, right? He'll make 3 of them. One of them will, like, rim out. And then the third one will, like, basically go off his hand and, like, just go, like, hit the side of the backboard. And I always felt like that he was afraid and always thinking about the one that hit the side of the backboard. And that's the reason why he didn't want to do it. And because, you know, you look at it and you see it and you're saying, he can make this shot. But it was, I always felt like, you know, he always knew that on every level, in each level that he went to, he was bigger and stronger and faster than everyone else. So he could just always go on in the lane. And one time I talked to him about that, and he says, you know what, I'll start taking it. He wasn't being arrogant or nothing like that, but he kind of admitted to it. And he says, you know, no one has ever forced me to shoot from the outside. And he says, I guess whenever that day comes, then I'm going to have to really focus on it hard. And he always talked about this summer what he was going to try to improve his game. And, you know, I would be shocked just by knowing the type of guy he is. I would be shocked if we didn't see, you know, at least a little bit of improvement this year, you know, from last year. And I just basically think he just has to be comfortable, and he can't be afraid to fail. And once he does that, I feel like we will see an improved jump shooter.
Do you think do you think we're going to see a completely different looking shot? Because, I mean, Kobe Bryant was one of the people that said, you know, trash it, throw it in the garbage and rebuild the whole thing. The Sixers have been resistant to that idea. I think Brett Brown used the phrase intense refinement on his jump shot there. I mean, do you think we'll see an overhaul to it? Do you think he's going to come back with a few modifications? What are you expecting?
Yeah, I think it might be a few modifications, slight modifications, but, you know, I think that, you know, the fact that, like, they don't want to change his shot altogether. And the fact is, like, you know, when you see him in these workouts and you see him make 3 out of 5, it's just like they feel like, yeah, it's a crazy looking shot in some people's eyes, but at the same time, it's working for him. He just has to be more comfortable, you know, making it. I think that what they're afraid of doing is they just don't want him to change who he is. They just want him to just start hitting more shots, you know, because for them, you know, this year, even this year, the goal was finish around the rim and become a better foul shooter. They weren't even really focused on the outside shot. So, you know, we'll see what they do. Now, I will say that he, you know, he'll like this year, the shooting coach that they had, you know, it was basically for Ben, you know, and it's going to be the same thing throughout his career here. So, you know, I mean, again, I don't expect to see full-blown modifications or just a brand new shot. I think we'll see some slight things, but it's just a matter of them wanting to see if he can just take more shots this year.
Do you think the free throw stuff was mental too? Because, I mean, he was also a terrible free throw shooter, 56% from the line.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that, well, also I think with the free throw thing, it was kind of like if you looked at his hand sometimes, it was like he was. It looked like sometimes he would start with one hand and finish with the other one. You know, so it got to repetition. But and it was funny though because I remember it was a game late in the season, and you know, you used to always ask Ben like, "What do you want to work on?" I hate asking that question or whatever, and he would always say everything. He like, come on, dude. Like, you know, just tell me something. And then, like, one day he was like, do you need me, Keith? And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then he says, so, yeah, I want to work on becoming a better free-throw shooter. It was like he just volunteered that. And then you saw him, like, gradually becoming a better free-throw shooter. So, you know, I think that, you know, he's a guy with that. It came down to, like, just repetition. Becoming more comfortable, you know, and again, he's a great athlete, and he's always been successful for the most part. And I felt like certain things that, you know, that was his weakness. I'm not saying he didn't work on them, but it was just one of those things where, you know, the outside shooting, he didn't do it because, you know, he didn't want to fail. And I think the foul shooting, you know, it was one of those things he was just always scoring on people, and he wasn't really a shooter. But then it got to a point where he put the extra work in because he didn't want it to be hack a Ben and people to criticize him for that.
Let me finish with this. Joel Embiid, the Sixers over the last couple of years have justifiably been very cautious with coming off the injuries that he's had to the foot, even the face injury. He was a 30-minute-per-game guy last year in the games he did play in. I haven't heard of any new injuries to Joel Embiid at this point. So are the shackles going to be off Embiid this year? Is he going to be kind of free to play as many minutes as he physically can?
Yeah, I mean, and when you think that he's making $148 million now, I think the shackles have to be off. and then also, if you think about it, this summer is actually the first time that he's really been able to work on his game. The other summers, he was always coming off of an injury, you know, so the shackles are going to be off. You know, he's definitely going to come in into this training camp, the best shape that he's been in, you know, heading into a season. So before it was always like, you know, we want to take it slowly because he's out of shape. He has to get in shape. You know, we're worrying about his foot. We're worrying about his back. You know, right now, I believe that the shackles are going to be off, and he's going to play.
The chemistry with him and Simmons, does it look like it's the kind of thing that will develop into a good partnership down the line? Did you see signs of future success there?
I think so. You know, I think so. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that they're best friends or anything like that for that matter, but they work well together. And the thing is, you know, in this era is typically when you have two different guys and they're both, you know, are like superstars, you know, typically you see that they don't get along. Well, these dudes, they get along. But I think that they both know that it's one of these things, like, if you ask me whose team it is, it's Joel Embiid's team. We all know that. But at the same time, I think they all know in order for them to take the next step and be successful is Ben Simmons has to help them win games. And they can't do it by themselves. Another thing that really helps out is that, you know, the positions they play. It's unlike Shaq and Kobe, where Kobe was a two-guard. You know, he was looking to get up shots. Well, Ben is looking to get assists, and he's looking, you know, to get triple doubles and stuff like that. So on the court, you know, the best player on the court, you know, outside of him in his eyes is Joel Embiid. So you're going to feed the big man, you know. So now, again, we're not going to see these guys, like, you know, after the game hopping in the same car together, you know, going out, you know, hanging out, having a meal, but at the same time, they know that they're linked together, and the team's success and their success, especially Ben Simmons' success in regards to getting paid, you know, is going to basically come down to, you know, feeding the big man the ball. So, you know, I think that they'll be fine.
Should be fun. Sixers and Boston, they should have a pretty good rivalry over the next few years as those young guys start to mature. Hey, Keith, always appreciate your time, man. Try to get a little bit more rest, and we'll see when the season starts.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Mark Medina and Keith Pompey for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.